You are Locked On Rockets, your daily podcast on the Houston Rockets, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
What a win. Welcome in to Locked On Rockets, the only daily podcast covering the NBA's winningest team. I'm your host, Ben DuBose, Rockets correspondent with Sports Talk 790, the team's official flagship. What a response the Rockets had on Wednesday night in Game 2. After taking it on the chin in Game 1, losing by 13, the Rockets, they responded to that punch in the mouth the same way that they've dealt with adversity all season long, by simply coming out and playing even harder and turning the tables completely, winning 127-105, a game that wasn't even that close. It could have easily been 30-plus if not for the Rockets calling off the dogs and going with the Aaron Jackson lineup in the closing minutes of the game. The Rockets, they led this really by double digits from about the four-minute mark of the second quarter onward. They're up by 14 at the break, cruised in the second half, broke it open with a furious 17-2 run in the fourth quarter. Just so many big contributors up and down the lineup. PJ Tucker, playoff career high, 22 points, 8 of 9 shooting, 5 of 6 from 3, all from the corners. Also had 7 rebounds, 4 assists. I'm reminded when Mike D'Antoni said earlier this year that the bigger the game, the better PJ shoots. That was certainly true tonight. Eric Gordon, 27 on 8 of 15 shooting, 6 of 9 from 3, very nice, a team best, plus 29, even better, I guess we could say blessed as well. The bottom line, after game 1, I noted that playoff Eric Gordon had an efficiency rating of 9.8, and we talked about needing him to cancel out Klay Thompson. He was nowhere close to that in game 1. Well, tonight, he thoroughly outplayed Klay Thompson, 27 for Eric. Just 8 points for Klay Thompson, none in the second half, 3 of 11 shooting. So through 2 games, Eric Gordon, he's holding up his end of the bargain, and he tied James Harden for the lead in scoring tonight. Harden at 27, just 9 of 24 from the field, did have 10 rebounds. Chris Paul, 16 points, 6 assists, 4 rebounds, but felt like just a mixtape for Chris because of the way he broke players down off the dribble. The epitome of a team win for the Rockets. Defense across the board was significant. I would say that was led by Trevor Ariza. Now, Ariza shot the ball well in his own right, 19 points. Also had 6 assists, which shows you one of the emphasis for the Rockets, which was being much more aggressive in attacking the rim. Trevor, 7 of 9 from the field. But he played 36 minutes, just 3 fouls, and just having him out there, as opposed to game 1, when he played just 23 minutes due to foul trouble, and that was a big part of the Rockets' struggles on the defensive end of the court. So there are a lot of adjustments the Rockets made, a lot of heroes. We'll discuss them throughout our normal 3 points recap. But to lead off, what I think is the most important takeaway from this game too, the 127-105 win by the Rockets that knots the series at 1, makes it effectively a best of 5, heading back to Oakland for a pivotal game 3, not until Sunday evening, so we've got a few days to take it all in for both teams to make adjustments, etc., etc. To me, the biggest takeaway of all is that the Rockets answered the bell in a game in which the Warriors clearly wanted it. Spare me the nonsense that I'm sure will be out there on a few accounts about the Warriors taking it lightly. No, this is the first time since they added Kevin Durant that the Warriors are not up 2-0 in a playoff series. And in this one, the opportunity to go up 2-0 heading back to Oakland, the biggest threat by far, because let's be real, the NBA Finals opponent, the Boston Celtics or Cleveland Cavaliers, are not nearly good enough to beat either of these teams. This is the Finals. And I said it and meant it going into tonight. This was a must-win game. And the Warriors, they're not the Cavaliers who tend to play with their food. The Warriors, really the entire era of their championship dominance, and especially since adding Kevin Durant, they don't fool around in playoff series. They have the killer instinct. So for the Rockets to match the Warriors' intensity and then some, it shows you what we've seen all season long, which is there's a reason the Rockets don't lose back-to-back games with James Harden and Chris Paul. And even against the Warriors, because the ultimate argument was we saw how they came, bounced back from the losses, game 3 against Minnesota, game 2 against Utah, And the obvious response is, okay, that's the Timberwolves, that's the Jazz, this is the Warriors. Well, the Rockets still turned it around by 35 points. That's how good this Rockets team is. We now have 94 games of data. The Rockets were 6 games better than Golden State in the regular season, although I'm willing to say the 6-game margin was inflated by all the Warriors' injuries at the end of the year. Really, when both teams were healthy, they were pretty much at the same level. And now, through 12 playoff games, the Rockets and Warriors are each 9-3. They're both really good offensive teams. They're both really good defensive teams. And it's not just one game. It's not just a matter of the Rockets made an adjustment that the Warriors weren't ready for, that the Warriors didn't take the game seriously. No, we have 94 games of data that shows the Rockets are in that class. So, yes, there are some little things. Certainly the intangibles the Rockets have shown, and we've seen that before, that they're able to respond to this level. That's tremendous. I'm thrilled to see that. But the larger takeaway, in my opinion, is that the conventional narrative, and I've been poking holes in it for weeks, but it's wrong. It's not like when the Warriors magically decide to try that the Rockets just are this cute little team that they have great chemistry and they work hard, but they can't match that level. That's nonsense. The Warriors knew this may, considering the status of the Eastern Conference, the Warriors possibly could have won the NBA title tonight. Not officially, but from a practical standpoint, if you go up 2-0 going back to Oakland on a team that won 65 games, they're not going to lose. The Warriors played like it. They wanted this game. And yet the Rockets on both ends of the floor matched their intensity, and they showed you why the Rockets aren't just a cute little team with good chemistry. No, the Rockets are a juggernaut in their own right. For all the narratives after Game 1, and they were so flawed of, oh, the Warriors took the Rockets' best shot, that's nonsense. For all the people pointing to the fact that Harden was 14 of 24, scored 41 points, and yet the Rockets still lost the game by double digits. Okay, but what made the Rockets a great team was not just James Harden or even Chris Paul. It was that depth that did not show up. It was the fact that the Rockets, especially in the 5-9 area of the roster, they were better than Golden State in the regular season at that. They weren't in Game 1. And so in a Game 2, even with Harden shooting just 9 of 24 from the field and 3 of 15 from 3, it still didn't matter because the Rockets got that much more from the role players. Ariza, 7 of 9, 19 points. By the way, Ariza having 19 points, only scoring one of those from behind the arc, shows you how aggressive the Rockets were. PJ, career high 22, 5 of 6 from 3. Eric Gordon, the very nice, 6 of 9 from behind the arc. That's what the Rockets have done this entire season. James Harden may be the MVP, but that's not enough to make you a 65-win team in today's NBA. You've got to have more than that, and that's what the Rockets showed you. Now, does it mean the Rockets have figured out the cure to all the things the Warriors do and that the Rockets have turned the corner? No. Going back to Oracle, that's an incredible environment, although the Rockets have won 2 of their last 3 games in Oracle Arena, so I do think they're more poised than they've been in prior years when it seemed to be a house of horrors for them. But Golden State at home, they're going to be a different beast. And at some point, it's a best-of-5 series, and now 3 of those games are in Oakland, so the Rockets have got to get at least one there. I'm not overly worried by it, because in series like this, with 2 teams this good, you rarely see just one team hold serve the rest of the way. Usually, if you want home court, it's because you want those pivotal Game 5, Game 7 at your gym, and the Rockets still have that. They got to go out and do hard work of winning in Oakland, but I think the team is capable of doing that. The real takeaway, though, I don't think that all of a sudden now the Rockets are going to sweep out, I should say, but that's the same reason why you shouldn't have thought that the Warriors would sweep after Game 1. Both of these teams are really good. The Warriors landed quite a punch on Monday night. The Rockets responded on Wednesday. And they're probably going to trade haymakers throughout this series. This is not just the Warriors' coordination. This is a matchup of 2 teams that over 94 games have been there all season long. The Warriors are going to make adjustments. Maybe they'll shoot better. They were just 9 of 30 from behind the arc tonight, although the Rockets' defense certainly contributed on that low percentage, 30% to some degree. But whenever one team has a good game and makes some adjustments, okay, that's the way this sport goes. What defines series is not just the initial wave, but also how you respond to that. And that's what the Rockets have been so good at all season long. I don't know if the Rockets are going to win this series. What I do know is that they are going to compete. They are in the Warriors' class. they are able to compete at that level. And I think tonight, above all else, to be able to not just win, but win going away in the very setting that the Warriors in the Kevin Durant era, really, I'd say the entire Steve Kerr era, have been so good at putting teams away, not playing with their food. No, the Warriors did not take it easy tonight. They wanted this game. You could see, especially Steve Kerr on the sideline, getting extremely animated on a number of occasions. The Rockets were simply the better team. Does it prove they're going to do it 4 times out of 7? No, but it proves that they belong. They can compete. This is not just the Warriors coordination, the Warriors league. No, what we saw over the first 92 games before this series is very much legit. The Rockets are in that class, and now it's just going to be a battle throughout this series of who can make the plays at the opportune times. We haven't had too many of those thus far, with both games being, game one wasn't a true blowout, but we haven't had any game yet where it felt like the game was truly in the balance in the last 5 minutes. I suspect that's going to change somewhere in the coming 5 games, and ultimately, whoever can steal a 50-50 game is probably going to be the team that wins this series. But for now, I think the biggest takeaway is just a reminder that, yes, the Rockets are that good. This is not just the Warriors League. Everything you saw over the first 92 games of the season before this series is very, very real. Even against Golden State, Houston can be that good. Now, I wanted to lead by discussing the broader picture implications, because to me, that's by far what you should most take away out of tonight. Because as we saw from Game 1 to Game 2, styles can change on a dime. So just because the Rockets had it easy tonight, it doesn't mean that's what's going to happen on Sunday night in Oakland, when both teams have 3 full days off, extended break for television purposes, because it's not nearly as advantageous for the TV partners to have their games on Friday and Saturday nights. And so, in terms of style, that's why I wanted to lead with just the overall perspective, because I think that's the biggest takeaway, because this series can change a lot from game to game. But in terms of what the Rockets did differently, I'm a big believer that it started on the defensive end. For all the talk about the Rockets being an offensive juggernaut, and they are, but their offense often feeds off of their defense. They were much more engaged. It starts with Trevor Ariza being able to stay on the floor. That helped a lot. But in general, they were much more assertive. They jumped passing lanes. I thought Trevor Ariza and Chris Paul's anticipation on the defensive end was simply incredible. They forced the Warriors into 15 turnovers, which almost matched the 16 the Rockets had in Game 1, which is a big factor in what went wrong for them. They closed out hard on the threes, which in the first half, the three-point attempts slowed in the second half. It seemed like the Rockets, and maybe part of it's just because they could get to the rim at will. If you can, you got to take advantage of that. Early in the game, it felt like it was just a math thing for the Rockets. They want to get off as many threes as they can, and they also want to close out on as many from Golden State as possible. So I thought they closed out harder. I think you could always tell the degree to which you're dialed in against Golden State, especially a team like the Rockets that switches, by Klay Thompson's performance. He had 28 in Game 1, 9 of 18 shooting. Game 2, 8 points on 3 of 11 shooting. Now, Kevin Durant was still brilliant. 38 points, 13 of 22 shooting in 35 minutes. He's just ridiculous. But what I mean by Klay being the barometer is that Klay does not really create his own offense. Side note, that's why that Jordan Schultz, just that talk after Game 1 of comparing Harden to Klay was just absolutely ludicrous. He should be embarrassed about even posting that poll, which I'm sure many of you saw on Twitter, because, of course, what Harden has to do versus what Klay has to do are two different things. Klay is very good in his role, but there is a limit to what he can do because he's generally not creating his own offense. So when it comes to Klay Thompson's stat lines, he tends to succeed when teams are undisciplined, because the back cuts, the screens away from the ball, we heard from the Rockets after the game, the primary takeaway that they kept pushing was about how their defensive communication wasn't nearly good enough. And by the way, it's kind of understandable because they had had nearly a week off between the end of the Utah series and the start to Golden State. So maybe, you know, rather than fatigue or any of the hot takes people came up with about ISO ball, maybe it was just, quite frankly, the Rockets were mentally out of sorts, and now they're back in the flow. And if that's the case, then it bodes well for them. The deeper we go into the series, we'll have to just wait and see. By the way, really cool stat that ESPN just threw out there, Eric Gordon actually outscored the Splash Brothers by himself. So kudos to Eric for shutting me up and a lot of other people who have been on him. Now, you need it for more than one game, but this was massive for Eric, making plays one-on-one, which we'll get to that in the offense portion. That'll be our final segment, what the Rockets did differently there. For now, I want to get to defense, and to get back to the Klay Thompson point. Klay gets his play, it gets his points, his shots, off of your breakdowns. He is so good away from the ball that if you are undisciplined, he will find ways, be it a cut to the basket, a cut to the wing, a cut to the corner. If you are undisciplined, he will kill you. The Rockets were undisciplined on Friday, on Monday, I'm out of sorts with my days of the week right now. But yeah, in Monday's game one, Klay had 28. They lost him in the half-court sets. He was lethal in transition. By the way, the Warriors, with about 5 minutes left, was the last I saw the fast break points. The Rockets were ahead 12-7 after losing 18-3 in Monday's game one. I'm not sure how it ended up, but that was the last moment before it was garbage time. And of course, garbage time may have inflated or deflated the overall numbers a bit. But the bottom line is, it's not the Rockets necessarily picked up the pace all that much. 12 is better than 3, but it certainly wasn't like it was a high-octane attack. But they were much more disciplined in transition defense. And so the looks, in terms of the breakdowns, Klay Thompson, that's where he kills you. Those were practically non-existent tonight. So that's why, to get back to one of the things I said leading off, that's why it's so silly to hear people acting like Game 1 was some masterstroke by the Rockets and the Warriors were just better. No, the things that make the Rockets elite, they weren't doing. This game two was much more representative of what we've seen from the Rockets all season long. Even with Harden going 9 of 24, 3 of 15 from 3, and not being all that crisp, the overall defense, and I would say, I mentioned the anticipation, Chris Paul, Trevor Ariza jumping passing lanes, PJ Tucker was just a man amongst boys in this game. One thing that really was intriguing was how good the lineup was with Chris Paul, James Harden, Eric Gordon, Trevor Ariza, and PJ Tucker, the Tuck Wagon, which we've seen in the past. But it involved Luke Bamute. Luke played just 7 minutes in the first half. Clearly, he's still not himself with that shoulder. They'll have to use these next 3 days to see exactly where not just his shoulder is at, but where his head is at. Because, of course, some of what he's going through is clearly mental, with a fear of taking hard contact on that shoulder when he's around the rim. But it was intriguing to see just how effective that Tuck Wagon lineup was. Because it's one thing to have a Tuck Wagon lineup that involves a lot of defense. But if you can have that much success, including defensively, with all three guards and Trevor Ariza shooting out there, boy, does that open up possibilities. That is incredible to see the Tuck Wagon lineup, even without Luke Bamute, have that much success, that between Tucker, Ariza, and how dialed in, really everyone, let's include Paul, Harden, and Gordon tonight, defensively, for it to work that well. Certainly it's a testament to PJ, who played 36 minutes and just played his heart out tonight. A lot of this was sheer grit and effort. But that lineup being not just playable, but dominating the way it did, that's interesting. Because even as good as the Warriors are, if you can play Chris Paul, James Harden, and that version of Eric Gordon together, that's firepower that can even rival the Warriors when they're right. And by the way, Steph Curry just 1-3 for a second consecutive game, 2 of 13 through two games, 7 of 19 overall. Clearly that knee not all the way back. The Rockets abused him one-on-one yet again. There's a lot of positives to take out of this matchup, not just tonight, but moving forward. But I would say it started with defense, because they didn't have the breakdowns, and the offense in many cases, I don't think the offense really got out that much more fast break. Now, they started earlier in sets than they did in game one, but it wasn't like all of a sudden this was the 7 seconds or less Phoenix Suns of Mike D'Antoni. No, what few points they got were actually off of fast break points, were off of stops or turnovers they got on the defensive end. The defense fed the offense, and of course, as we mentioned, the role players, it's funny how when they make shots on offense, they might try harder on defense, or the flip side, if they make a few plays on defense, then all of a sudden the offense gets going for them and they make more shots. And I haven't even mentioned Clint Capela yet, whose stat line might go under the radar, 5 points, 10 rebounds, but 31 minutes. There's a reason he played 31 minutes against the Warriors. In the second half, his rim protection was big time. Didn't have a block, but watch the tape. Clint Capela in the second half was a huge part of how the Warriors couldn't get back in this game. They got it one time to 10 points, but they never could get on that extended run because, well, we mentioned Curry going 1 of 8 from 3. We mentioned Klay Thompson not getting his looks. So at that point, it became a game in which the Warriors, after all the criticisms of ISO ball, the Warriors actually had to go ISO. And Kevin Durant mentioned he's still incredible. 7 feet tall, best shooter, or one of the best shooters on the planet. 38 points, 13 of 22. There's only so much you can do with him. But for everybody else to get going, they had to attack the rim. And Clint Capella denied him at the rim. No blocks, but again, only 3 fouls, played 31 minutes. Clint Capella is playable against the Warriors through 2 games, and that answers a huge question about him that we had going into this series, and I think it proves that everything we've seen from Clint this entire playoff run is legitimate. Yeah, in today's NBA, he's a max player, and incredibly, he's still getting better. I actually thought he's a lot better just in the second half of this game from as opposed to the first, because in the first quarter, Clint wasn't very good, and it's amazing how he pulled himself out of that during the game. First quarter, he got beat a few times by Steph Curry off the dribble, and boy, did Clint adjust, and by the second half, he was a huge part of the rim protection that it felt controlled the game for the Rockets on that end, and ultimately, that's why I think defense is what led to offense, to kind of spark the turnaround, because it wasn't like the Rockets' offense was particularly humming in the first quarter. 26 points, but they were just 3 of 10 from 3. They missed a lot of open looks. Luke Bamute missed like 3 layups again. But they held Golden State to 21. They found a way to... They were winning even without playing well. They found a way to grind. And then they kicked it into overdrive once the Eric Gordon shots started falling. 38 points in the second quarter. Combine that with the defense that was there all along. And the Rockets got the blowout that they deserved. Third and final segment, let's move on to the offense. Wanted to lead with defense to give them their due. But offensively, what was different, what was most fascinating about it, they did start earlier in the shot clock. You didn't have as many possessions where they waited until under 5 seconds, which I mentioned that box them in. Actually, had at least 3 shot clock violations on Monday in Game 1, which was very unlike them. But it wasn't like all of a sudden they became this fast-paced juggernaut. It wasn't like they abandoned ISO ball, although there was a little more movement away from the ball. I thought the biggest difference in this game was that they pretty much abandoned the pick and roll. Maybe not entirely, but there was significantly less of an attempt at a pick and roll. And of course, the reason that's important, the reason the Rockets are an ISO team in the first place, they would love to run that pick and roll all game long, that high pick and roll with either James Harden, Clint Capella, or James Harden, Chris Paul, either one for the other, for a shooter. They would love to pick and roll teams all day. But great teams in the NBA, and the Warriors certainly are, especially defensively. They're very flexible with that Hampton Fives lineup. The big four of Curry, Durant, Klay Thompson, Draymond Green, plus Andre Iguodala. They can switch on everything. So they switch on the pick and rolls, and it makes it harder just to get that lob game going, or even the direct kick out for three. And it kind of gummed up the works to where the Rockets, I think, to some degree, that's what led to them having too many possessions that started too late in the shot clock and ended up with just ugly heaves near the end, was trying to fit basically a square peg in a round hole. Because with the way the Warriors were defending them, there's not much ways to play that pick and roll. Well, it felt like tonight, they pretty much abandoned it. It was just one-on-one. We're going to make plays early in the shot clock off the dribble. And that's why, you know, I mentioned earlier, Chris Paul, 16-6, but it felt like he was putting so many guys. Steph Curry, who the Rockets isolated again at will, had a ton of success. The grade 2 MCL injury, it's not just the offense, it's especially the defense, where Curry is compromised, and the Rockets are seeking to take advantage of that at will. But Chris Paul had his own mixtape. Now, we did see him with a wrap around his lower right leg towards the end of the game. Have to hope that the extended time off between games is especially useful to him at 33 years old. We don't know the exact nature of the injury, but my guess is by how they were working his calf and had the wrap around his lower leg, maybe a sore Achilles, which happens a lot to older NBA players, especially with mileage late in the season. The key is just rest and management and having a few days off between Game 2 and Game 3. That might can do wonders. But ultimately, the Rockets, it felt like abandoned the pick and roll. It's just, look, let's make plays one-on-one, and either you have success directly or the first time that there's help, swing the ball. You had, of course, more action away from the ball, which is helpful, but it's a misnomer to just simplify ISO ball and to the other four players are doing nothing. That's not what the Rockets do. It's never been about that. And, you know, they do have a lot of isolation possessions by the book, but it doesn't mean that the other guys are just static, that there's zero ball movement, that there's zero position. Actually, the Rockets are extremely precise in terms of the exact spot on the courts that these players go. I saw Trevor Ariza before the game working on a number of curls in the corner that were very precise in terms of his footwork, exactly the type of rub that he was going to get. So just because you throw out the term ISO, a lot of people take that to mean that the other four players are just standing around. No, that's not how it's supposed to work. It didn't tonight. And so generally what you saw, rather than wait for a pick and stand around, of course you had action away from the ball, but generally, whoever had the ball, Chris Paul, James Harden, Eric Gordon, of course, it also helped that Gordon hit his first two threes, which made the Warriors come out on him even more, and so that made him a little bit more effective as a driving threat. One of the big differences, I thought, Eric Gordon had four turnovers on Sunday, zero tonight, much more efficient, not just on threes, but overall off the dribble as well, just two assists, but it felt like that he was drawing defenders, and that's the key. Because what happens so many times, we see these sequences. If you type in Rockets ball movement on Twitter, you'll see these crazy passes. What ends up happening is you get the defense in a compromised state. You see that first guy start to shake whoever he is on. Someone comes and helps. Well, the Warriors are all very agile. And, of course, they'll try and scramble out to the shooter. Well, that guy puts it on the floor. I mentioned Trevor Ariza, six assists. And just one three-pointer that's very unlike him, but it's emblematic of what the Rockets did tonight. PJ Tucker had four assists. The Warriors, they can close out on threes better than anybody because they're that agile. Okay, well, head fake, put it inside, and you still have the advantage somewhere because they're scrambling. So you just have to be disciplined, and even the guys who are not typically passers like Trevor Ariza and PJ Tucker, here's a stat for you. Ariza and Tucker had 10 assists. James Harden and Chris Paul had 9. And that shows you the patience the Rockets have. They weren't getting the primary action. The Warriors are that good. Give them credit. But the Rockets can adjust too. And so one of the things that we saw, of course, early in the game, they took a high volume of threes, and it helped that they made them. And then the Warriors adjusted by coming out even harder on any shooters. And the Rockets proved that, no, it's not just Chris Paul and James Harden. Other guys can make plays as well. And I don't know that it's something they did dramatically different from game one to game two. There was a little more action away from the ball, and I would say generally what they did was less about going away from ISO, and it was more about going away from the pick and roll, just saying we're going to start earlier in the shot clock, just going right at players, and ultimately helped the Rockets made shots early, because I think that made the Warriors feel they had to overcommit. And in the second half, the Rockets just took advantage of just constant rim runs, it felt like, and honestly, that's what you've got to do. If the Warriors are going to play that Hampton Fives lineup a lot, they don't have a lot of rim protection, well, you've got to be able to go to the rim and take advantage of the fact that there's not a true shot blocker or rim protector, and they did that. They loosened him up with the shots, and of course, that's what the Rockets do. They are a great three-point shooting team, but in the second half, they showed you they could drive as well, and that's why they are one of the best offenses in the history of the NBA. By the way, the point I mentioned earlier about Stephen Curry, and they're finding every way to whatever man Steph Curry is picking up to make him, to bring him closer to the ball, even though there wasn't that much direct pick and roll. You did have some attempts at four switches involving Stephen Curry, even if you didn't have that normal high pick and roll with the big, whoever it may be, trying to slip to the rim. The Rockets, 23 possessions on Stephen Curry, shot 7 of 15. That's nearly 50%. That's pretty damn good. The Rockets, they know that Curry is not himself, and that's why, on top of the Rockets winning 65 games, this is a great chance against the Warriors. That's why they belong. And for all the narratives that we've heard throughout this series about the Warriors doing, you know, all the attempts at framing, as I mentioned earlier, Harden had 41 on nearly 60% shooting in game one. The Rockets were at home, and they still won by double digits in the Warriors' case. Well, here's one for you. Kevin Durant, who entered this series shooting 27% from three, had 38 points on 13 of 22 shooting, and the Warriors were still clowned. Draymond Green has not been a big factor on the offensive end of the floor. Andre Iguodala has not given them much, which is to be expected all year, based on what he's done all year long. Steph Curry is clearly limited by the grade 2 MCL injury. And Klay Thompson, he was great in game 1, but in game 2 it showed you that when the Rockets are more dialed in, they can limit him. Maybe some of it was a few bounces that went your way. But by and large, the Warriors were a Kevin Durant team tonight. And even with him having a monster performance, they still got blown out. That shows you how good the Rockets are. Imagine if KD has a game in which maybe he shoots 9 of 22 and has 29 points. The Warriors might lose this game by 40. Adjusting, of course, for the garbage time. I mean, they were down by basically 30 before you went to garbage time and the Warriors shaved it to 22 at the very end. But there's some concern for the Warriors here as well that, you know, people tried to make it out to be that the Rockets wasted a Harden virtuoso performance in Game 1. Well, you can say that the Warriors wasted one from Kevin Durant in Game 2. It feels like we're even, just as the series is. And again, it's not that James Harden played poorly. 27 points, 10 rebounds. He was very active. The 10 rebounds speak a lot to defensively. He was much more disciplined. He didn't have the lapses, either in the half court or especially in transition. He won the game. Just 3 of 15 from 3, so he didn't have the touch. But that's why the focus on Harden after Game 1 was misguided. Look, what makes the Rockets on Golden State's level and what has on the season has not been just James Harden and Chris Paul, because those two alone are not enough against how top-heavy Golden State is. It's about the depth for Houston. And when that plays the way it did tonight, Eric Gordon with 27 points, PJ Tucker, career-high 22, Trevor Ariza, 19, those three guys, just an incredible combined night of 23 of 33 from the field, from Gordon, Ariza, and Tucker, who don't have that many shots near the rim, although Ariza and Tucker did tonight. They were surprisingly effective around the rim. Tucker even had a couple of great possessions in the post in which he finished inside and then kicked it out on others. Overall, great performance by the Rockets on both ends. Reminds you, of course, the winning DNA, the championship DNA, the things we've talked about. Yep, they've got that in them. But beyond that, there's some concerns for the Warriors, too. Can they adjust, especially when they get back to Oracle? Sure they can. But ultimately, what we've seen through the first two games is pretty much what we've seen through the first 92 for both teams before the first two games of this series. These teams are pretty close. There's not that much separation. And on a given night, the Rockets can absolutely win it, just as they did in Wednesday night's Game 2, going away. There's still a long way to go, but if the Rockets can get this to a Game 5 or Game 7 in Houston, yeah, there's a chance that they could do some really special things, including even closing out the defending champion Warriors. For now, though, I will leave things there because I don't want to get too high. It is just one game. I do look forward to watching. As far as the X's knows, it's hard to talk too much after just watching it live. It's much easier for me to talk more X's knows after being able to see it on film and rewind, fast forward, those types of things to get a better sense. Those are just some of my initial thoughts. We'll have more in the coming days because we do have a lot of time off Thursday, Friday, and Saturday. So I'll get a second look and see if I feel any differently about some of these things. I'll also try and get some outside perspective with interviews, what you normally expect of us here at Locked In Rockets, the only daily podcast covering the Houston Rockets. For now, I will wrap it. Again, I'm Ben DuBose, your host. This is Locked On Rockets. Follow me on Twitter at Ben DuBose, the show on Twitter at Locked On Rockets. Also, don't forget our website, LockedOnRockets.com, email address, LockedOnRockets@gmail.com, Facebook account at Facebook.com/LockedOnRockets. Always, you can access our content, including our archives. Ask me questions about the team, make suggestions for the show, anything we can do to make this a better podcast for you, the diehard Rockets fan. I, of course, would love to hear from you guys. Also, don't forget iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, Megaphone. If you're not already subscribing to us, please do. Also, leave us a 5-star review. That's how we're able to remain viable to advertisers and make the financial model work to keep being the only daily podcast covering the Houston Rockets. Once again, the happy final from Toyota Center on Wednesday night from Game 2. Rockets 127, Warriors 105, series tied at 1, Game 3 Sunday night at Oracle Arena, in which one team will come away having a 2-1 lead in the best-of-7 series. For now, Houston, have a good night, and we'll be talking again very soon right here at Locked On Rockets, the only daily podcast covering Houston Rockets basketball.